Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Best of Interviews on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Sheil Kapadia of The Ringer. Sheil, welcome to the show.
How we doing, guys?
Oh, dude, we're doing great.
What up, Sheil?
I'm on video, you know, I can see you guys. This is amazing. I feel like this marks a new era in me being a guest on the afternoon show here.
Well, so as I'm looking
to the show,
yeah, as I'm looking, it looks like you're standing. Are you a stand while you do this stuff, guy? I am. Are you?
Absolutely. I got to stand. You know, the IT band issue for over a decade here. Too much sitting is the new smoking. At least that's what influencers on Instagram tell me. So that's generally where I take my life advice.
Stand up, Ike.
Dude, I'm with you.
Should I be standing?
Dude, I have IT band problems in my right knee, too.
Three out of four on this show right now have IT band problems.
There you go. All right, Sheil.
I don't even know if I got all types of other issues.
Yeah, you do. We're all old, so I don't know if standing makes you not old, but welcome, Sheil. So, Sheil, you know, a lot to go through here before we get to Kansas City. You're including your thoughts on the Cowboys Eagles game. I guess let's start with the offense. Offensive performance. You know, what did you think having rewatched it?
Yeah, I thought it was very good. You know, they only had seven possessions in that game, so I think some of the final numbers were a little misleading where you said, all right, they scored 24 points, but usually in an NFL game, you have 10 or 11 possessions. So I thought the opportunities that they had, they made the most of it. I thought Jalen Hurts made good decisions. I thought he was a huge factor, obviously, with his legs. And there's going to be some stuff to work on, which I'm sure we'll get to here. But overall, I thought that was a good way to start the season.
Are you coming out in defense? That sounded like defense.
What's that?
Like defensive Jalen before he needed to be in defensive.
Oh, yes.
Jalen.
Yeah, I think he's supporting the Jalen performance on Thursday night.
Were you going to attack him?
Was I going to attack him?
Well,
no.
About that?
I thought it was a good performance from Jalen.
Okay.
I think some people have gone a little. We had Ross Tucker on. We didn't have the morning show.
I gave him an A also.
Yeah, the morning. Oh, you gave him an A. The morning show. Ross Tucker gave him. Said it was the best game he's ever played. I was like, I feel like a psychopath. There's no way it's the best game he ever played. He played fine. You know, he played good. That's
yeah.
What I have.
Yeah. I mean, the Super Bowl performance. There are a lot of games I would put above it. I mean, I think one of the things you look at it. And it's fair to say, all right, is it sustainable to scramble for five first downs every game and be that much of a factor with your legs? Is it sustainable to only have one explosive play in the passing game? So those are things you can nitpick. Now, I thought there were reasons for all those things, and I thought he made good decisions. But yeah, I was with you. I think we've seen him be more prolific, and I think he's had a lot of good games. So I wouldn't put it way up there, but I thought it was a good start.
So let's get to the passing part of it. So we actually just played a cut from AJ Brown, who said, you know, I was not a decoy. I'm not hurt. The reason that there wasn't any separation is because they zoned me up the entire time. So I guess the question is, I understand all of that, but they're going to see zone defenses all year long because they haven't been as good against zone defense. So if you're Kevin Petullo and Jalen Hurts, how do you find a way to get AJ and Devontae involved if teams are going to defend you that way?
Yeah, I thought you had to do more stuff. I'm in favor of just manufacturing touches to AJ Brown on the first, second possession every single game. I want that guy invested. Good things happen when you get in the ball, whether it's a screen, whether it's a little slant. So I think it's true what AJ Brown was saying, but I'm with you. If it were that easy, every team would just do it every single week. It's not that easy. Zone coverage in the NFL is the predominant way teams play 70, 80% of the time, a lot of these teams in the NFL. So I think you have to do things schematically to free him up. I thought there should have been more opportunities to take shots to him downfield. You know, they like to line up really heavy with tight ends, and then they were kind of just running running the ball out of that. I would have liked to see a little play action, move those zone defenders, and then create some windows downfield for A.J. Brown. So I do agree with him. I think there were times in that game where they called his number. You can see it. He was Jalen Hurts' first read, but the way the Cowboys were covering it, if Jalen Hurts would have thrown the football, it would have gotten intercepted. So I put it more on the coaches. Come on, find ways. This is what you're paid for, to scheme up touches for your best player.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that, Shield. Kevin Petullo, first game, I was not necessarily impressed with a lot from a schematic standpoint. Be interested to see what it looks like Sunday going up against Spags, who somewhat knows this offense, which brings me to, Shield, the running game part of this offense. The last two outings in the running game, including the Super Bowl, they've sort of bottled Saquon up and the explosive runs weren't there. Is there something defenses are doing? Now, me, the lady, I would just say they're stacking the box, but it seems that it has to be more than that, right? Is there something that these defenses are doing now that's sort of bottling Saquon up?
Yeah, for the Chiefs, I think part of it was they would kind of line up with two deep safeties and then move one safety closer to the line of scrimmage right before the snap, or they would move their linemen right before the snap. So all of a sudden your blocking assignments maybe get messed up a little bit. I thought in week one, I think Landon Dickerson is obviously playing with an injury there. Tyler Steen doesn't have a ton of experience. So I just thought they were a little bit off. And then the big thing to me, and something to keep an eye on this week, is when Dallas Goedert's off the field, the Eagles tight ends kind of get blown up in the run game. I mean, this goes back to last year when Dallas Goedert was injured and you saw the run game maybe wasn't as effective those games. So if Goddard's injured this week, Grant Calcaterra is fine for a number two tight end, but some of the things they asked him to do, they didn't work last week. I mean, it got ugly. Some of those plays got blown up. So I think they have to be a little bit more creative. Maybe they run more out of three wide receiver sets or do something else, because I think that will be an issue again this week. Again, if Dallas Goedert is out, or even if he's limited in this game.
Shil Kapadia with us of The Ringer. So defensively, I know we won the game. And you look at the final score, and the Cowboys, what, scored 21 points. But, man, it just seemed like Zach Baum played well. Jihad Campbell played well. But aside from that, the defensive performance was pretty concerning to me overall. How did you feel about it?
Yeah, I would agree with that, with the only caveat that I feel like Vic Fangio has earned the benefit of the doubt. To this is going to take some time for him to learn his personnel, a lot of new faces. And I wouldn't give any coach the benefit of the doubt there, but given what we saw last year where there were struggles early in the season and then they figured it out late, I do think he's kind of earned that. But I'm with you. I mean, it was not a good defensive performance. I think cornerback two, the way the Cowboys were able to just manipulate some of those matchups and get CeeDee Lamb on Adoree Jackson, we saw that over and over again. And then there were some plays that Adoree Jackson is getting beat on, but you look at Dak Prescott's pocket on those plays and there is nobody near him. I mean, they're trying to use a four-man pass rush and those guys were not close enough to Dak Prescott. So as we know, it's all connected, the pass rush, the coverage, but I'm with you. I want to see what it looks like this weekend against Mahomes and Andy Reid, because if Brian Schottenheimer can scheme up those matchups, then Andy Reid is going to be able to scheme up those matchups and really test Adoree Jackson early in this game.
And Adoree Jackson was as bad as it felt, right? I mean, like he didn't play, like it wasn't just bad luck or it wasn't just they were picking on him. It didn't look like he is up for the job, at least in week one.
I thought he had a tough time. Yeah. I mean, and it wasn't just the CeeDee Lamb snaps. I mean, there were other times where they had Turpin, their number three wide receiver, and they're going at him and he's kind of stiff arming Adoree Jackson down the field. So he's not the most physical player. I think when he was in his prime, kind of the coverage skills were really good. And so that's what you're looking for. He's not going to be a perfect player, but you expect him to kind of force some tougher throws than he did in week one.
So the Chiefs lose the first game. The last we saw the Chiefs was the Super Bowl where they got obliterated by the Eagles. And we were talking yesterday, everybody gives the Chiefs the benefit of the doubt. At some point, that will stop if they don't, if they don't look good anymore. And even the regular season last year, they won a bunch of games, didn't look great. When you watch that first Chiefs game, what are you seeing out there? Are you seeing a team that just might not have enough talent anymore? They got eviscerated defensively, and offense, it looks like everything is difficult for them.
Yeah, I think the floor is high. You know, I'm not predicting they're going to win seven or eight games, but to your point, they don't look like the best team in the AFC. They don't look like one of the best teams in the NFL. You know, they made changes on their offensive line. They've got two new starters on the left side, including a rookie. They didn't do a whole lot with their wide receiver group, and it's just not a great group when you look at it, compare it to some of the other great offenses in the NFL. So that's offensively. And then maybe the bigger concern for them in week one, at least, was defensively. I mean, they got lit up by Justin Herbert and that Chargers offense. They put up, what, 394 yards. They went up and down the field on the Chiefs secondary. So, yeah, I think they're a little unsettled right now. Yeah, I don't know if there's stuff coming off of that Super Bowl and they thought, all right, we'll come back next year and it's going to look different. But I looked at their offseason moves and thought, I don't know that this is enough for them to look like a different team this year. So it almost seems unthinkable that Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid could go 0-2 to start the season. I believe this is only the second time in Mahomes' career that they're an underdog at home. I think it's only happened one other time in 2022. So yeah, they're kind of in a weird spot right now early on in this season.
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it. I hate it, Chill. Because I know Andy, and I know how this thing, you give him extra days to prepare, and now he can use the underdog card and that whole thing. Usually a big jump is made, Chill, from week one to week two, around the league in general, right? Everybody, no one plays in preseason, so things look choppy and sluggish that first week. Then the second week, things starting to tighten up a little bit, and you start to get to see who you truly are as a team. I say all this to say, do you expect the Eagles to come out and be a little more crisp, a little more explosive, as opposed to what they were last week? And I know they made some plays, but I want the offense we saw last year. And then from the Kansas City Chiefs standpoint, do you expect them to look more like they did last year versus what they looked like last week?
Yeah, I would think so for all the points you laid out there. Now, the Chiefs play a little bit more in the preseason, and Andy still runs one of the tougher camps in the NFL, from what I understand. But, from an Eagles perspective, I like that. They got to be more explosive in the passing game. When you see the plays that the Chargers made downfield last week, I think you're going to need those more this time around, especially when you look at how the Chiefs defended the Eagles in the Super Bowl. And they said, we're stopping the run. This is not going to be a Saquon Barkley game. If Jalen Hurts can beat us through the air, we'll live with that. And Jalen Hurts beat him through the air. And so, that was only two games ago. It was a long time ago, but it was only two games ago. So I don't think the Chiefs are going to drastically change what they do just from their approach and what they're prioritizing defensively. So I think the explosive plays in the passing game are going to be a big, big deal for the Eagles. I would take a shot to A.J. Brown really early in the game, maybe line up with two tight ends and go play action and take a shot to him downfield. I do think the Chiefs will be a little more crisp. Week one can lie to us. There's no doubt about it. We look back through the history of the NFL and some of the things that happened in week one. You look back week 10, 11 and go, how in the world was that the result of a week one game? So I'm with you there.
Well, remember the Saints last year. They looked like they had the best running offense of all time the first like two or three weeks of the year.
Yeah.
You know?
Scored like 100 points the first two weeks.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. So, Shiel, you instructed Jack to keep track of your wins and losses
bad
for
move
picks.
By me.
Now, I'm looking at Jack. He doesn't even.
That's no shot.
It's unbelievable.
Who'd you pick last week?
I believe he picked the Eagles
to
cover.
He took the Eagles last week.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, you took them to cover, though, didn't you, Shiel?
I did.
Okay.
That was spread. We're adults here. We're not just picking straight up. So, yeah, I'll take the L there, although I am tempted to lie since we know Jack's not going to keep track.
Right, well, I'll keep track.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, that's just going to make Spike
I'm starting a Google Doc. Everyone take it down.
All right. Okay. So, Shiel, what do we have the line at now? Eagles 1.5? Is that where it sits? So, all right, Shiel, give us your pick that maybe Jack will record, maybe he won't.
Yeah, I think a lot of this game is going to sort of look like last week, where maybe it goes back and forth a little bit. Maybe defensively they're picking on some of your inexperienced players or your weak spots, and the Chiefs are going to be able to move the ball. But I look at it from a talent perspective, and I do think the Eagles have the edge here. And I remember talking to you guys last year early in the season. I keep trying to predict, all right, they're going to lose this game. And you know what? I'm tired of trying to predict when this team's going to lose. When Jalen Hurts is healthy, when A.J. Brown's healthy, and when Lane Johnson's healthy, they don't lose a lot of football games. I think they're 38-9 with Jalen Hurts the last 3 years when he starts and finishes a regular season game, which is wild. Which is wild.
That's elite, elite winning.
A lot of quarterbacks that have a similar record.
Winning.
Everyone relax.
So, yeah, it's incredible. So I think it's going to be a close game, come down to the fourth quarter. But I think this might be a weird season for the Chiefs. And I'm going Eagles 26, Chiefs 23. Ooh. Eagles cover the 1.5.
All right.
I like it.
We'll see. Oh, do not give Shiel the sheep noise. Shiel's not a sheep guy. Come on. That's
Jack's, that's your boy Jack, Shiel. That's Fritz.
Jack found the new sound effect. He's just dying to use it. Shiel is not a sheep. I don't believe Shiel's a sheep. All right, Shiel. Great job. We will talk to you next week. Thanks,
right,
as
brother.
Always.
All right. Good to see you guys. Talk to you next week.
All right. And there he is. Shiel Kapadia of the Ringer. Joins us every Wednesday at 3 o'clock, Larry Anderson. L.A., thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for getting me back on the winning track. So
there we go. Yeah. There we go.
It's all us. It's all us. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. So, L.A., Kyle Schwarber hits number 50 last night. What a season from him. I guess I don't have a question other than your enjoyment watching a guy like that have a season like this. How has that been?
It's just, it's remarkable. It's, and I was saying last night, I'm sure a lot of people have said it, that, you know, it's only a matter of time. He's not going to stay in this, and it's, you know, it's going to happen. I guess I didn't hear it. I apparently Krucky called it, or someone called it. So, I mean, everybody, you just, you watch him, you just know something good's going to happen. He was hitting the ball hard. He was lining out. And so he was getting back into the swing, getting his timing back. And that ball, I mean, it's like coming out of a cannon when he hits it. Yeah. And then I didn't realize till after the game we got our post-game notes where he's the only player to hit 4 home runs in a game and hit 50 in the same season.
Wow. I did not know that.
Only player in the history. Mm. That's a lot of – I mean, there's only, I think, 21 now that have hit 4 home runs in a game, but none of those guys ever hit 50 home runs the year they hit 4 home runs in a game.
Yeah, only 21 guys that hit 4 home runs in a game, only 34 guys that hit 50 home runs, and he did both of them. It reminded me of when 50 home runs happened again, because it was Cecil Fielder, you know, what was it, 93, something like, or 92, like, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But it just, I think to a certain extent, the steroid era, like, blurred what a big deal 50 home runs is. And it's just massive. And it's, you know, it's understandable because it actually happened to Judge a couple years ago when he was chasing the record that he got stuck on 61. I'm sure on some level Schwarber gets to 49 and he's thinking about it, maybe presses a little bit. So hopefully this will just, you know, open the dam a little bit for a normal Kyle Schwarber, which we haven't seen in the last few weeks.
Yeah, but going forward, I mean, what a great time to get back on track. And I do think we were talking after the game, Murph and I were talking about how this could set him off, you know, getting that 50th. And, you know, I'm sure Kyle, he always says the right things, you know, but he's human too. So I look at it like he says the right things, but you can't tell me that it's not in the back of his head. Like, man, I got to get this 50th, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then, you know, and that can affect a lot of things, you know, your emotions, your mentality, you know, going to the plate, whatever. But now he's got it. Now it's kind of like just relax and get back to being him. And like he said, you know, he just wants to hit the ball hard. And if he does hit, if he does barrel it up, if he gets it airborne, it's probably going out because he's that strong. He's got that great bat speed through the zone. And it's just, it's almost like you just, when he goes that long without it, you're like, oh man, what's wrong with this guy? You know, you expect it. I mean, and he carries the team for a lot of times or has. And to see him go in a drought, you're like, and then you know, losing Bohm, losing Turner, you're like, oh no, this is not the time for him to be, you know, not struggling. Well, struggling.
Yeah, he was struggling.
So great sign to see him hit that. And again, like you said, even before the last couple games, he was lining out, hitting some balls hard. So felt it was just a matter of time where he's back on track. Now that he's got it, who knows? I'd love to see him hit 60.
It's
might be tough, but
well, you never know. He goes on a run, you know. It's funny, before the season when people were talking about extensions, I was one person saying, "Hey, let him go out there and earn it. Let's see if he has a good contract year season." And I'll tell you, LA, he certainly had one of the greatest contract year seasons of all time. So not as this good for the Phillies, I will tell you, it'll be good for Kyle Schwarber's wallet after this season is over.
I'm pretty sure either he or his agent will just send out checks to each ball club, just blank. Say, fill it in and then just put down the number of years you want, and we'll go from there.
Absolutely.
I mean, pick your team. Do what you want. I mean, somebody's going to pay him a lot of money. I hope it's us, but you know, that's not my decision. It's, you know, much higher up than me. So, but, I mean, it's just a joy of watching him and the way he carries himself and what a good guy he is, you know, through the course of his whole career here, that the time he's been here. It's just you would hate to lose somebody like that, but it happens. It's a business.
Yeah, you go from one potential free agent to another.
Yeah.
Ranger last night and what he was able to do. I know he's one of your favorites, L.A., and watching him pitch since Zach Wheeler has gone down. I mean, he had a couple of those starts prior to that where we were like, man, what is going on with Ranger? But he looks like he could easily be the ace of the staff right now since Zach has gone down. What have you seen that Ranger is doing different and that allows him to be effective the way that he was last night?
To me, the biggest difference that I've seen is the use of his curveball in this second half, or maybe even a little longer than that, but specifically from, I think, more from the second half, where he's using his curveball more. And I think that's another weapon that he didn't use much. He would, you know, his changeup, his cutter, his fastball, and he had those, but it was like one off-speed pitch that was, you know, like your changeup is like looking like your fastball, but it's obviously slower. But now you get a breaking ball that's it's like another changeup with a different shape to it or a different look to it. You know, it's breaking down, whereas a changeup, you know, breaks down a little bit down, but away from a right-hander. The curveball is, you know, coming straight down or maybe into a right-hander a little bit, you know, but he can backdoor it. I think that his curveball has been the biggest difference in the success he's had of late, especially with the strikeouts he's having.
Yeah, you know, it's funny when we all talked about the velocity going down, especially when he was struggling there. And I kept saying to myself, he can't keep on like this. Like, there's no way he can keep being successful. But then you just, in this age of velocity, I had forgotten there are plenty of pitchers in the history of baseball that did not throw 100 miles an hour and had superior control and just were great pitchers. And Ranger is not only just a great pitcher, he's also a tough SOB up there, and I think we would all, as great as Chris Sanchez is, and as like I feel no nerves with Ranger Suarez on the mound during the playoffs.
None at all.
Yep.
None at all. And his command, you touched on it, is like, I say control is being able to throw a strike. Command is being able to throw a strike in the strike zone where you want.
Yep.
And he's got the command. When he can throw that fastball or cutter in on the right-handers, he had some strikeouts last night at 91 miles an hour by Alonso, Soto's, he's got the best numbers against Soto as anybody has, or better than anybody has. But just, you know, when they want to look for something, it's like he's playing chess out there on the mound while the hitters are playing checkers, and it's not really a competition. It's he has them baffled. It's like he knows what they're looking for, and he knows not to throw that. It's remarkable that. They're looking for something off speed. He throws a fastball by him at 91. It's like, wow. I mean, everything he does, he changes the eye level up and down, and he changes the eye level in and out. So you got a hitter, it's like he's kind of just rolling around in that batter's box, not knowing to lean in, lean back, lean forward. You know, it's just, he just does it so well. And it's his command, being able to command the strike zone is just, phenomenal. So I agree with you totally, Spike. I have no qualms or questions about him facing anybody going in the playoffs.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. You're seeing exactly,
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland,
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And the thing about being able to throw strikes and being able to mix it up is it just like you throw early strikes, it's all about leverage with the pitcher and the batter. And if it's 0-1, all of a sudden Ranger has leverage. And if they don't know what's coming and they're not going to guess in first pitch swing, it's just like it just seems like, and when you compare him to Nola, who we'll talk about in a second, Nola feels like even in a good start in the at-bats, he's always catching up. Like, whereas Ranger, it always feels like the batter is trying to catch up to him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and there's never any panic. And Murph and I were talking in the post game. I was like, I would be curious to see if he went and had to go get an EKG, would anything show up? You know?
Yeah.
It's like, and I mentioned, you guys might know, but Hondo Havlicek. I mean, they talked about the great Boston Celtics player that, like everybody talked about him, like he didn't have a pulse. Like he could just keep going and going and going. And just, I don't know why that came to my mind, but that reminds me of Ranger. It's like nothing phases him. Nothing bothers him. He doesn't panic. And it was really rare when he got upset with the umpire, you know, a few starts back or four starts back, whatever it was.
Yeah.
That was just so out of control for him. And it affected his pitching. There's no doubt. But other than that, man, he's just been phenomenal.
Well, also for what it's worth, he was right about the umpire. So
yeah.
Speaking of Nola, he goes six innings, no runs, which was really, really good to see. He has struggled pretty much all year. Did you see anything different from Nola in his good start as compared to the ones where he struggled?
Used his curveball and his changeup almost the same amount.
Okay.
Now, to me, that's a big difference. He threw one cutter. I guess it was a strikeout of Soto. I didn't notice it was a cutter. I wasn't looking for it, but I didn't think he'd thrown a cutter all night. And then when they said that was a cutter, I'm like, I don't remember seeing that ball cut. And I guess it did, but punching out Soto with that. But the other thing, the big thing I think was using his changeup more. And he's got a good one. I think sometimes he just doesn't have a feel for it. But he had a feel for it, and I think that was a big difference. He'd go with off-speed with his curveball or his changeup, and his fastball, although it wasn't at the knees for the most part, it was just above it. He was lower in the zone, but when he wasn't down, he was on the corners, and that's if you're not down and you're not on the corners, that's when he gets beat up bad. But he was, I still think he could, and he knows it. He knows it. Like I say, it's a matter of 3 to 4 inches if his wrist is kind of turned where his hand is parallel to the ground. That's when he's under the ball, and that's when he elevates it, and he's not trying to. When his wrist is up and it's perpendicular to the ground, that's when you think about, that's when you can throw downhill and get the ball down to the knees. And it's just a matter of moving, keeping your wrist up. When he throws his curveball and we see it going straight down, he's on top of that. And if he could just get the feel of his fastball, getting his wrist in that same kind of position, up and down, instead of kind of tilted to the side, I think it makes all the difference in the world.
You know, LA, Jack certainly knows the difference between 3 and 4 inches, can make a big difference.
It's called a big dose of D.
He does have two children. So, yes. LA,
two for two.
So, LA, final thing.
A lot going on in that answer, LA. I'm just saying.
Now. Yeah.
A lot of wrists moving up and down.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on
in
that answer. He was whacking that thing.
Oh, mercy.
Oh, I love this show. Okay. So, last thing, LA. And again, I like to ask questions, but this is going to be more of a statement looking for your response. I just think the Phillies this year, certainly compared to last year, feel particularly resilient. There have been, when you look at their record, they're 9 games up on the Mets, 4 games up on the Dodgers, 4 games out of the best record in baseball. We've missed Harper for a month, Bohm for probably a month combined, Nola for 2 months. Wheeler is out. They lost Alvarado to a suspension. Now Trey is out, and it just seems like the sort of rally around, play your best baseball at the end of the year, keep moving attitude that we wanted to see. It just feels like the Phillies are doing that this year, and it's been really encouraging.
I couldn't agree more. Like I'm telling you, it's when you lose, your ace, you lose your top, if not, a guy MVP candidate at short, Bohm's out now. But I would be curious to see what our record is since we lost Wheeler. It's got to be pretty good. And because everybody's stepping up, and it's not like they're doing more. They're doing what they're doing, what they're capable of. They're doing, I hate this term, but their best version of themselves. I mean, they're pitching where they should be, where you expect them to be and where they want to be. And they're hitting, at the top of their game. They're not, it's everybody's doing it. It's like, everybody knows I got to do my job. If I do my job, we'll, you know, everybody else does their job. And that's what seems to me like what's going on. They're not doing anything extra. They're just doing what they're absolutely capable of. And it's just coming out, and it doesn't matter who, somebody goes down, somebody comes in and picks them up. Bader, look at what he's doing. I mean, it just all around. Cassie's gotten some big hits, even though it's, you know, been, you know, not playing every day. It's more of a struggle. Kepler playing a little more. Everybody's just—it's doing a great job, and it's fun to watch. And so, and it is the resilience. And when you talk about all the losses they've had, and they're still where they're at—what, 25 games over? It's phenomenal. And I think I look for them destined to really get after it going into the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited. Last year, I was terrified of the playoffs, if I'm being honest. This year, I'm looking forward to seeing what they can put together. So,
yeah, great.
All right, LA. Wow, all this good news. I don't even know what to do.
Positivity. Yeah.
It was incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want me to bring up umpires again? I'm just kidding.
No,
all right.
No,
all right, LA.
All right, brother.
There he is, the great Larry Anderson.
I believe they're 15-7 since Wheeler went down.
All right.
That's
good.
That's
the 682 win percentage.
Yeah.
And that's with the three games at cheating Citi Field.
Yep. Joining us now, as he will all football season long, the great Mike Mayock. You can hear him on the Believe in Eagles podcast with Lee Mayock. Mike, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. How you guys doing?
What's up, Mike?
Good, man. It's always better to do the show a 1-0 week of show week rather than an 0-1 show week. So we're doing pretty good.
Yeah, and there was, at times, I'm not sure 1-0 was looking real good.
Yeah, I mean, the first half of that, why don't we start with the offense? Because the first half of that game, it just really felt like, oh no, we're not going to be able to stop them at all, and I don't know if we can score enough. So why don't we start with the offense? You know, it's they scored on a good percentage of their drives, and Jalen, at least in the first half, looked good, but you look at the game in the end, and there's things to pick apart. So what did you see offensively from the Eagles?
All right, I'm just going to give you my I spent 5 hours watching this tape. I was really captivated by this tape, and I'm going to give you my offensive notes at the very end, a synopsis of the game. Point number one, Jalen Hurts won this game with his legs. He scrambled all day long. I was, not only did he scramble out of necessity, but he also scored two touchdowns. They win the game because of their quarterback. Point number two, if you're going to run 12 and 13 personnel, which is multiple tight ends, all of them need to block better. Point number three, offensive line, not what we're used to. I thought Dickerson struggled. I think he was probably still hurt. He looked kind of stiff and slow. Surprisingly, both tackles had some bad pass reps. I thought Osa Odighizuwa, number 97 from Dallas, was a factor in the game, and the offensive line just didn't play as high a level as they typically do. And if I had to grade the offense, I would give Jalen Hurts an A+ and the rest of the team a C+.
Wow, an A+ for Jalen. So let me ask you this.
About, not where I had him at.
Yeah, let me ask you this about the performance. And you mentioned the scrambling, and it was one of the better scrambling games I've ever seen him have. And he was decisive, at least in the first half of the game. Is when he didn't see what he wanted, he would take off running. I guess my question is why did he need to do that? And is that something that you think moving forward is sustainable for them to rely on his scrambling and his running that much?
No, I don't think it's sustainable. And I do think that, number one, we got to give a little credit to a team that is better than I thought they were with Dallas. I thought they came in with a good plan. I thought they took away the run game really well. I mean, in all honesty, Saquon Barkley, if he doesn't stand on his head a couple times, he doesn't even have the numbers that he ended up with. He made some guys miss. And I guess what I'm trying to say is they've got to block better. And I think you probably got the feeling of that, both from what I said about the tight ends and about the offensive line.
Yeah.
I'm talking about pass protection and run game.
Yeah. Yeah, even Kevin Petullo mentioned that in his press conference this week, that the blocking certainly needed to be better in that game Monday night. I was going to ask you about what Dallas did to this offense, Mike, to sort of bottle them up. Right? The running game has been bottled up two straight games if you throw the Super Bowl in there as well. Is there anything you're seeing that, like, defenses, you know, this is a copycat league, so they're going to probably see some semblance of what Dallas did or some variation of it. Anything particular they did that sort of gave the Eagles problems?
Well, they were in some eight-man looks, and I know Kevin Petullo talked about that a little bit also, but if you're going to be a run team, you're going to see some looks you don't love running against. I think from a personnel perspective, I kind of look at it and go, okay, they lost Becton. You know, you're working Steen in, and Dickerson wasn't very healthy. So this is week one of a transition, and I think it's going to get better. And I think it'll start to get better this week because their coach is really good, and they'll start to get a feel for what they do well and how they do it against certain looks. So I'm nowhere near panicked.
Okay.
And I'm happy they got the W. I'm just saying there's some turnover in that O-line, and I thought the left guard didn't look like the left guard usually does.
One more thing on the offense before we move to the defense, Mike. There has been, and I think fairly so, a lot of talk about A.J. Brown's one target. And, you know, it's not like Devontae Smith went off either, you know, three catches for 16 yards. What can they do if teams are going to keep throwing the same sort of zone at them every single week? What can they do to make sure they're utilizing those guys to the, you know, they're spending a lot of money on those guys. So what can they do to make sure that they are getting the most they can out of A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I thought that Dallas did a nice job on play action also, even though they were coming aggressively downhill, crossing routes, typical things you see off flood routes, sail routes that you see off play action, they really covered well. So give Dallas some credit. It'll be interesting this week when you look at Kansas City from a matchup perspective, because Kansas City shut down the run last week and really struggled, A, putting any pressure on Justin Herbert, and B, covering wideouts. Okay? So the way I look at this game coming up is it'll be a really nice test for the Eagles to hold up pass protection wise, and give them an opportunity to throw the ball, get them off on their heels a little bit, and then maybe, you know, I'd love to see if they're gonna throw the ball early, and try to get the lead, and come back in that second half and run Saquon. But again, I'm not panicked at all. I just think every year between weeks one and two, you see the most adjustments made.
Mike Mayock with us right now. All right, now let's. You mentioned the top of this. It didn't look like we might win the game, and I think a lot of that has to do with the Eagles' struggles defensively. What did you see that didn't work? And then from there, do you see solutions to the things that didn't work?
Well, I mean, you start with too many penalties, and they got called for 9 accepted penalties. 7 of them were on the defense. And in the first half alone, you had the dumbass Jalen Carter thing before the first snap. You had 3 defensive pass interference calls. You had a taunting. You had an unnecessary roughness. And that was all in the first half. Okay? And if you look at it by series, I think if I remember correctly, Dallas went touchdown, touchdown, field goal, then halftime.
Halftime, yep.
And then in the second half, it was lost fumble, punt, punt, down. Okay, so they didn't score in the second half. So things got a little bit better. I think Vic is the kind of guy that knows how to fix some things at halftime. But that was just point number one, the penalty thing. Point number two is I'm not sure if the answer at corner is on the roster right now. Adoree Jackson got the first shot. They had 5 catches at 14-plus yards and the DPI. And to be honest, a lot of those catches were way too easy for an NFL game. Thought he played a little bit better, a little more comfortable in the second half, but I'm not sure what they're going to do out there. Number 3, if CeeDee Lamb catches 3 passes he normally catches, I'm not sure that's a win. Number four, you know, who do I like off the tape? Zach Bond just continues to blow me away. The hustle play on the run, catching the running back from behind, set up the forced fumble to change the game. Mm-hmm. Ojomo and Jordan Davis both had to play plus or minus 90% of the snaps because of Jalen Carter getting thrown out. And this Jihad Campbell dude, you know, he's got a long way to go before he's going to be a polished off-the-ball linebacker. But you want to talk about big play potential, he's the guy that had the forced fumble after the Zach Bond hustle play.
Yep.
And there was a 30-yard seam pass down the middle.
Yeah.
Yep.
That hit the back of his friggin' helmet. And I watched him run from the far side of the field to get underneath that. And that's rare for any linebacker, let alone a rookie, to get there. So I got a kick out of that, and I think Nolan Smith is developing into a quality edge guy, both run and pass. So they were kind of my positive takeaways on defense.
Yeah, you mentioned the cornerback, too, not being on the roster. Do you think they have – now, they just add Za'Darius Smith from an edge perspective. Do you think they have everything they need on the roster there?
At edge?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I only had – time to literally watch 10 snaps of Za'Darius Smith last year, which was his sacks. He had, maybe he had 8 sacks, whatever, but there were 10 plays. And what was interesting to me was the way he was used. Remember, it was Cleveland. He played for two teams, Cleveland and Detroit.
Yep.
A couple of the sacks in the Cleveland tape were inside, you know, and he did a nice job inside working on guards. He did a nice job working a twist back to the outside. He's a little bit like a Brandon Graham, you know, and Brandon Graham was thicker, but this kid is still thick. He's a big body defensive end with some explosion to him. He just turned 33, I think, this week. I don't know what kind of shape he's in, but I'm hoping they can get from him kind of what they got from Brandon when they needed it, which was just some physicality and spark. I also thought Josh Uche made a couple moves on up and unders that were surprising and got some pressure on the quarterback. I already mentioned Nolan Smith. Jalix Hunt is a project continuing, and I'm not I like Jalix Hunt, but I love the fact that Howie just is never satisfied. And even though it's week one, they hadn't even gotten the 48 hours after the game, and they signed Za'Darius Smith. I mean, it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I was just about to ask you, Mike, about Howie's mindset and approach right now to, I guess, continually adding pieces to this team to try to get this team where he wants it to be. Your former GM, at this time of the year, right, once the season has started, where do you go to get sort of players that is an upgrade? It's hard to find them on the street, right? Is it you got to try to make a trade? Like, how does that work when you're a GM that when the season is starting and you're still trying to improve your roster?
Well, we obviously all have a ready list, which basically are A, guys on the street, like Za'Darius Smith was.
Yep.
And there are typically veterans out there that say, hey, I didn't like the money I was offered back in June. I don't particularly love training camp, so I'm going to wait until somebody gets hurt during the season and sign. And there are guys like that on the street. Mm-hmm. Number two, practice squad. Every guy in the league that's on a practice squad is technically a free agent. You can poach a practice squad player anywhere. So you've got a stack of practice squad players by position that you think are on. They're also on your ready list. Mm-hmm. And then finally, you're always kind of prior to the trading deadline, you're always out there trying to find teams that have a surplus at a position of need for you and to see if there's something available. I guarantee you Howie just flat out exhaust those things all day, every day.
Mike Mayock with us. So, Mike, looking ahead to Sunday, the Super Bowl rematch against the Chiefs. Chiefs lose their first game against the Chargers. It's sort of hard, at least right now, to decipher between the Chiefs as like the legend of the Chiefs and what we are watching right now. From a talent standpoint, where do you think the Chiefs are? And is that seeing what Justin Herbert did to them in the past game, is that something you think the Eagles can replicate on Sunday?
Yeah, it's really interesting because like the left side of their offensive line is different. It's Josh Simmons and Kingsley Sumataya, a first-round pick and a second-round pick, instead of Joe Tooney and Caliendo. Athletically, very much upgrades the two guys this year. Now, it's going to take a little time for them to get together. So it's kind of a good time to get them right now. Also, at the wideout position, you know, Rashee Rice, 6-game suspension. Xavier Worthy, questionable for this week. They're their two best wideouts. So, again, the Eagles are kind of getting them at a good time offensively. They don't have to play their best wideout. And even if Worthy plays, it might be in a shoulder harness. So they're getting these guys at a pretty good time. Offensively, their run game is not dynamic at all. They don't have a running back that can take it to the house. The pass game has been severely hurt because of what I just talked about. The O-line's a work in progress. And really, it's all about their quarterback standing on his head to beat you. And that's what they're struggling in the red zone. You know, on defense, they were very stout against the run. I mentioned earlier they couldn't get a consistent pass rush unless they brought linebackers. That's why their sacks were Drew Tranquil had 2 sacks, a linebacker. They didn't force any turnover. So, you know, I'm a big believer in Spagnuolo, the defense coordinator. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll put something together to challenge this Eagles team, but I would think the Eagles ought to in their mind think we can come out and throw the ball against this team and we can do it early and often.
You think the Eagles win this game on Sunday?
It's a hard ask going in there. I've gone in there too many times to say it's going to be easy, mm-hmm. but I think the Eagles have more talent, and I think they're going to show a big improvement from week 1 to 2, and I do think they'll win a game.
All right. Thank you, as always, Mike. To have a guy's like, you know what I did before this call? I grinded 5 hours of that game. The game that only lasted 3, and I assume you didn't watch the
commercials and halftime.
And the delay. So yes. You're the man. So thank you so much, Mike. We appreciate it. We look forward to talking to you next week.
Appreciate it, Mike.
Yep.
There is Mike Mayock. You can listen to the Believe in Eagles podcast with Mike
grinder.
And Lima. Dude.
The tape grinder.
I love it.
Yeah.
Coach Dick Vermeil once again every Friday at 8 o'clock, brought to us by Independence Blue Cross, the region's strongest networks of doctors and hospitals, means you can choose where, when, and how you get the care you need. Independence Blue Cross, learn more at ibx.com. Coach Vermeil, how you been?
I'm doing all right, thank you. How about yourself?
Fantastic.
Super.
And thrilled to have you back with us for another season. You know, we love having you on the program on a weekly basis.
Thank you.
So how was the offseason, Coach? We'll get to the Eagles and the Chiefs in a moment, but how you been? How was the last 6 months?
I'm doing fine, yeah. You know, at your age, you have some situations you go through, at my age, rather. I'm very, very fortunate and very grateful for my health and my friends and my life, okay?
Excellent. Coach, before we get deep dive on the Eagles and Chiefs, I want to give you an opportunity, especially to the younger people that did not know who Jim Murray was. I know he was very special to you, general manager of the Eagles for a long time. If you could, your thoughts on the passing of the great Jim Murray.
Well, really, Jim Murray was the guy that really convinced me to come to Philadelphia. You know, Leonard Toast definitely was involved, but it was Jim Murray who was the spokesperson for the Eagles at that time. And, you know, he could sell a drowning man a bucket of water, that guy. And everything he said to me about Philadelphia ended up being true. And he made it come true if it was a little rough initially. He would make it come true. And I worked with him for 7 years, and I never asked him to do something that he didn't do. He never said no to me at any time. And one of the finest persons, I learned some real good lessons from him, too. Like, number one, never carry a grudge. When someone does you something wrong, treats you improperly, forgive him and move on and treat him as a friend later on. And Jim Murray had those kind of abilities, and he was one of the most compassionate individuals I've ever been around. Always very concerned about the other person, you know, and that's a great quality. And
no,
I always teased him. He was the best Catholic I've ever met. Like, I used to tease him, you should be the Pope's offensive coordinator, you know. Hey, we all miss him. Of course, you know, he didn't live too far from me out there in Chester County, and I would get in to see him at least once a month, sometimes twice a month, and have good, strong visits, and he always loved reliving the past. And he loved the Ronald McDonald House, what that program did for children. So that's the kind of person he was and will always be in my mind.
That's wonderful. Coach, wonderful. Let's talk about this game. And let's focus on the KC side for a moment. There are a lot of people, and I'm one of them, that think the Kansas City Chiefs are now teetering, that their reign of greatness may be over, and this season they may be sinking back to the pack a little bit. Do you think that is accurate or premature?
Well, I think it's a little premature. They're obviously not as good as they were. Last year they won all those tight, close football games. They maybe proved what they were in the Super Bowl, when a real good football team took advantages of their weaknesses and was really well prepared and coached extremely well and just beat the hell out of them in the Super Bowl. But I don't think you could ever say Andy Reid team is ready to fold. I don't. They have some issues. I don't think their offensive line is still good enough yet. In watching them play last week, I think both tackles still struggle within the game. They're banged up at the receiver position. But I promise you, I really believe they'll be tough to beat in Kansas City in the home opener. Plus, one of the great motivating tools for coaches in the NFL is the grudge. They probably have not forgot getting their butts handed to them in the Super Bowl. And that's a key motivating factor within the NFL. A deep respect and anger for the team that beat you many times produces an effort that they haven't been able to reach in the past. Of course, they've only played one game, but they've lost two in a row when you stop and think about it, okay? Yeah. And the San Diego was a real good football team. I think they're going to be the surprise of the whole league this year. They were pretty good last year until they got in the playoffs. But it'll be a tough football game. I think, you know, the Eagles didn't play this last week like they ended up playing last year, but they showed signs of being what they were, okay? And I thought the defense shut them out second half, right?
Yeah, it sure did.
They showed signs of improving during the ball game. And like training camps, how they are now, these first couple games, really, when you're a good team, they're really opportunities to really start really improving in the intense environment of playing the game and at the speed of the game. No matter when you scrimmage against other teams, you don't tackle them. So that always takes an edge off the intensity and the execution or lack of execution on certain kinds of plays on the practice field. So I think they'll play better, and I think they'll have to play a little better to win because it'll be tough for them.
These are not with their injuries, coach, at wide receiver and suspension. We aren't facing great wide receivers this week. Ja'Corian Bennett, Adoree Jackson. These cornerbacks that we have trying to play across from Quinyon, are they good enough this week to do the job against these receivers?
I think so. Yeah, you know.
Even though Patrick Mahomes is throwing them the ball, that makes it tough, considerably tough.
Yes, it does. But, you know, they're not going to get the kind of time they need to get the ball downfield on a consistent basis. You know, and you have Vic Fangio running our defense. You know, he's done it before. He's done it many times, you know. And the defense, I think, will continue on the pattern they played in the second half. They got a little better pressure on them than everyone thought. They had consistent pressure on them last week with the new pass rush, you know. So, I can't see Kansas City beating us, but they might. The Eagles are favored by my computer by 4. Okay. But they were favored by 18 last week and didn't win by 18. So
that's very true.
You can't always go by your computer. But in the early of the season, the information I have within my computer system that a friend provides me is not as accurate to predict how it's going to be this year, because they're using last year's information plus one. Once you get to 5 or 6 games with the new year, it better defines what kind of team you are.
Sure.
So, but yeah, it'll be tough. It'll be a good football game, and I think the Eagles will beat them.
Coach, how encouraged were you by Jahad Campbell's game last week against the Cowboys, and how likely is it that the Eagles can use him this week to help neutralize Travis Kelce in coverage?
Well, you know, I was impressed, and I get some of my evaluation information from Ron Jaworski, because he goes over to NFL films and studies all the game films in detail, you know, and I'm out here in the Napa Valley picking grapes, okay, so I couldn't do that. But he told me this week in our conversation that he was very, very, very good, very, very good, and was really excited about projecting what that first round pick is going to be now and through this year and on into the future. Howie did a great job in drafting him.
Sure did.
How do we handle Kelce the best? Does he factor in to covering the tight end, Travis?
Oh, yeah, you bet. I think, you know, there'll be good schemes. I had a Hall of Fame tight end in Tony Gonzalez, okay? Mm-hmm. And when he had problems against specific defensive teams like the New England Patriots and these guys, they put somebody on the line of scrimmage and tried to hold him up those first two or three steps to distract his route running process. And it worked pretty good. Now, somebody's going to do that with Travis as well. You know, right now, a lot of people are playing a very loose zone but the Chiefs don't have those wide receivers right now. So, I just think a good approach is to slow him down coming off the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
I've been told, and I know this for a fact, that Travis Kelce's in the best condition of any time he's ever played in the NFL. I mean, he really went to work in this offseason.
That's scary.
Yeah, that's serious. So he's going to be a factor, but I can't see him being the difference maker.
Good. Talking about the Cowboys game again, why were AJ and Devontae so quiet last week against the Cowboys?
You know, sometimes I have a hard time figuring that out myself, okay? Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes game plans go like that. You know, a defensive team, first off, if you're the defensive coordinator for the Cowboys, who are you worried about in the pass game? Those two wide receivers. And they're going to do everything they can to slow them down. Now, that reason is true, and I think it's probably one of the main reasons that they were slow. They weren't involved as much because that's what the defenses are supposed to do. And sometimes you just drift away because you've got a great running back, you've got a darn fine tight end, and you only have the ball so often. And pretty quick, you're into the third quarter, just like last week with Travis Kelce. He wasn't getting the football. Where was he? All of a sudden, he shows up with a big play. And that can happen. It's happened to me. It's happened to every coach. Believe me, it's not the intention of an offensive coordinator to go through a game not getting the ball in the hands of their best receivers. Normally, that's where you start your game plan.
How often do you end up having to force the ball to your guys that you want to get the ball to? I was flummoxed watching that.
Yeah. Today, against these coverages that they play, a lot of double zones, a lot of cover four, these kinds of things, you can force a throw into specific kinds of double coverages. Uh-huh. You can stretch the zone and put them in the seam between the deep and the shallow and all these different kinds of things. And I'm sure you'll see these guys in action a little bit more this week. Just from an emphasis standpoint, and you have to get the ball in the hands that can score, or you don't score many points.
Sure,
it's hard to score a lot of points just running the football.
Dick Vermeil with us, as he will be every Friday at 8 o'clock. Coach, let's talk about the Jalen Carter situation. One of the reasons we love having you on is to ask you, what would you have done? So Jalen Carter, third-year player, one of the best defensive players in the league. If you were Nick Sirianni going back a week ago and looking ahead of this game on Sunday, what would you have done with Jalen Carter?
Well, first off, I don't know him personally, but I would attack the problem with the knowledge and my experience of having worked with him for a while already and approach it that way. My first thought would be to jump his ass. But, you know, a quality player like him, who is so used to being praised for everything he does, this might have been the best thing that could happen to him, to be to make an insulting mistake. It's a great fertilizer for maturity when you make a mistake, okay? He isn't going to forget what he did wrong because everybody in the country let him know. In fact, everybody in the world knew about that. You kept seeing it every day on television. And I think at this stage of his career, it might be a good thing it happened for him to mature, grow up. There's no correlation between age and maturity. And that mistake will help him be a better person in the future, I believe.
Initially,
I would have jumped his ass. Okay. Yeah. Without knowing his personality, without knowing him personally. And I think Nick is that kind of person.
I did too.
Sometimes, sometimes the best person's ass to jump is the best player on the team because it gets everybody's attention.
Would you bench him for a series or more, or you're going all out with him from the first snap on to play the game?
I think I'd put him in play the game. Let him play.
Yeah,
I
agree.
That's 7 days ago, 6 days ago. Forget it and move on.
Yep.
I promise you, it's the best lesson this kid has learned.
Coach,
becoming a great player. Yeah.
Yeah. Two final things here. So you know Andy Reid very, very well.
Yeah.
And obviously John knows him, you know, very well as well from John's years with the Eagles. I'm curious. I looked it up this morning. Andy is 47 wins away from passing Don Shula for the most wins of all time. We know he can do it. Here's my question to you. Do you think he wants it? He doesn't seem to have as big an ego as some coaches in football who have major egos. Do you think he would want the record?
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't think he's coaching as long as he's coaching and plans on coaching to break the record. I think he's coaching because he loves to coach. That's his life. Those guys he coaches are his family every year, and he loves coaching football. If he ends up breaking the record, which I believe he will, because that's how long I think he will coach, it will be not because of ego or he wants the record, but just because he loves to coach football.
Coach, let's get your prediction. Eagles and Chiefs on Sunday. Sounds like both you and the computer are leaning the Eagles' way. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think the Eagles will beat them. I really do. And I know what an advantage it is for your opening game in Kansas City. It is a great, great venue, okay, in Kansas City. Everybody that goes there knows that's one of the toughest places to go in there and win, even when you're not a good football team. You can win at home in Kansas City. Maybe easier than other teams can win in their home just because of the support, the environment, the atmosphere, the whole thing. But the Eagles are a better football team. They're a more complete team. They have their issues, those two offensive guard situations right now. Even the starting guard last week, the right guard, to me, was not very impressive. Okay, not very impressive. That doesn't mean that line coach won't make them a lot better as soon as they get more intense work going in through the season. But they were not very impressive. But, you know, and the Chiefs have that great inside defensive tackle that will bug them if the guards don't play a lot better.
Coach, we love having you on the program. We're looking forward to another big season with you, and hopefully the Eagles can take it the distance again, and we just love having you on. Thanks, Coach.
All right. Take care, guys.
Joining us next, we've been talking about this guy all week because, you know why, Hugh. I mean, the return of the mic is a show coming to the Hard Rock in Atlantic City. We've given away tickets all week long here, and now we get to talk to the guy himself who's going to be doing the show, Mike Tyson, on with us on the Midday Show with Hugh Douglas and Joe Giulio. Mike, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing good, man. Good seeing you guys.
You too. So tell us about the show. And our audience has been jumping at the chance to get your tickets. They're on sale right now, by the way, to get tickets to your show, Ticketmaster.com. Tell us about the show. Tell us about the return of Mike.
Well, this is the return of Mike because before we did Undisputed Truth, and it was about me and my life and pretty much just everything that happened in my life to the present day. And so we changed it around periodically, and now we decided to come back after a few years, and it's going to be the return of the mic. And it's going to be me doing a lot of introspective views about myself. We're going to talk about my fight. By the time I finish my show, I would have had three fights by now. Like Roy Jones, Jake Paul, and now it's going to be Floyd Mayweather. So by the time I finish my show, I would have had three fights by then.
So talk about that Floyd Mayweather fight a little bit. What made you decide to get in the ring with Floyd?
Because Floyd is talking a lot of shit, challenged me. I was minding my business. I was thinking about another way where we could invest more money in this and do this. I wasn't thinking about fighting enough. We were all happy about the Jake Paul fight. We said, man, we can never top this, man. How can we top this? Because right after the fight with Jake Paul, I got a serious drop. Boom, I crashed. And it was training for like almost a year, a little bit more than a year. It all stopped, and it was like depressing. I was really depressed. I said, how can we ever top this? Nobody could ever top this. We broke the whole television system. And this came up. You know, I gotta be sorry. I gotta be careful what I ask for. I might get it, huh?
That does. All right, so tell us.
Yeah, listen, I wasn't expecting it. This guy just came out talking some mad.
That sounds like Floyd.
I didn't say nothing to him or anything. I love Floyd. I don't know why he's talking crazy.
Well, I can't wait for it. So, Mike, take us through your training now. How is it different? How is it the same as years past? Do you train the same way, or have you adjusted that as time has gone on?
From the last fight with Roy Jones, I learned I have to constantly stay in shape. Even after I stopped training for that period, I have to get right back in shape because it's difficult now when you get. And I thought, listen, I was saying, hey, age is not but a number. But when you get a little older, you have to start. You have to prepare for training. You have to prepare to get in shape. You can't take time off like you normally did when you were younger. You got to constantly be training, mostly 24 hours a day.
Yeah, I can imagine that. So for you, let's talk about the show that people are going to go to. We're giving away these tickets. What's it like for you to be on stage? I mean, you lived on a stage in the boxing room, but this is a different kind of stage. Do you get nervous before you go up there?
I am very nervous. It's like a fight. Just like a fight, I'm relaxed. I'm very confident. I've been doing this for years, and I've been very successful in it. This is going to be all new material, so I'm just looking forward to this being very successful because it's going to be so many. It's going to be about a lot of my lawsuits. It's going to be about my fights and Roy Jones and how I lost to a fucking YouTuber. And we had to resurrect that in some kind of way. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be your laugh. It's going to be very interesting.
No, I'm just saying. To hear you speak, I think that's the greatest thing about this show, Mike, is that it's going to be Mike Tyson unfiltered. And I think that's the beauty of you doing all of this because, you know, I don't know if you remember this, but I met you a while ago at Ohika Castle when he's up there for Big Daddy's golf tournament. And we were talking about being a vegan and stop eating meat.
Yes, yes. I eat meat periodically, especially when I'm selling it. And I periodically go from eating meat to not eating meat. It's just because I like to change my body function. Sometimes I like to crash. That's just my whole mentality. I'm a crash dummy.
No, we were talking about that. You were talking about how you were telling me how meat basically makes you aggressive and everything like that. Yeah, yeah.
Mike Tyson with us here. And coming up, so you have four of these. Rockford, Illinois, Cincinnati, Ohio, Hollywood, Florida, and the one in AC. So you get a little tour here with the Hard Rock. This is awesome. Four different shows you're going to do.
Last time I did it all around the world. I took it all over the world. It's very successful. People liked it. I'm very nervous about doing this because this is going to be new material, but it's going to be very explosive. You know, a caution that was very graphic, and I might say some things, so you may think twice about bringing your children or something.
So, Mike, when you do these shows, and you do the shows on stage, and it's kind of going through your story, and do you write your material all out, or is it kind of like you just get up there, or is it off the cuff?
Listen, it's just pretty much in my head. My wife writes it down so I can keep it periodically. Going periodically, but other than that, is basic. My life, talking about my life.
You don't use a teleprompter, huh? This is just all you got.
No
cards,
teleprompter.
None of that.
It's not fun with a teleprompter. Would it be fun?
I'm who you telling, Mike? I know.
I don't read it, and I don't read
that
well
as
I remember. So I might stutter or something.
Hey, Mike, I stutter every day. Nothing wrong with that, man. Yes. I do that every day on the air.
So I would be very disastrous if I had to read something.
No, I think it's better this way. Off the cuff, be yourself. Hard Rock Live. So the Hollywood, Florida on December 14th. And so that one is going to be taped and that's going to be on a streaming platform. So people can go to your show, but also this is going to appear on a streaming platform soon.
Yeah, and that's why I'm doing these other shows before I do this because I got to be at my best because we're filming.
Well, and it's look, we won the tickets on our show this week, Mike. They've loved it. We're giving away a pair of tickets right after we're done talking here. We're going to give away people to stay over at the Hard Rock the night you're going to do your show. So it's really exciting stuff. So when you're thinking about telling your story, which is the fight that is the one that like gets you the most excited to talk about? Of all your fights, which is the one like you love talking about?
That's a good question.
Wow, I never thought about that. And the Holyfield one is good too because Holyfield, listen, he's a good guy. He had the open spirit. He could take jokes and everything. He's just the best. Yeah, me, I'm talking about Holyfield for that. I like teams. Well, of course, I bit him too, so I have to talk about it.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah, it did. Well, it's good he could take a joke about it. Now,
he's the best, man. He's the best.
Yeah, you guys still see each other? Keep in touch?
Every time we see each other, yeah, I'm pretty much in touch with him. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I think in touch with him.
Mike, what was it like? What was it like back during the days where you're the champ and you're fighting another big fights? What was it like back then? Because the boxing has changed, right? It's not the same as it used to be. What was it like in its heyday when you were doing your thing?
It was just everybody was fighting everybody. Everybody was coming to the fight. It wasn't nobody that you didn't see. Everybody wanted to come to the fight because, believe it or not, everybody was put on television. You're an actor, you're a writer. People come to the fight, boom, you're put on television. And more than anything, we don't tell anybody. But like that camera right there is a narcotic. It's a drug. Once you see yourself on it, you want to constantly see yourself on it looking better and better and better. And that's the drug that we get addicted to.
Yeah, well, we do. And we get addicted to great performers. And you are one, were one. You're going to be one in this Hard Rock thing. Mike, we appreciate you joining us here. Return of the mic exclusively to 4 Hard Rock Live venues. And, of course, the one here in Atlantic City. We're excited to give away tickets. This Hard Rock.
Oh, we got some good stuff coming. We got some good stuff. This will be some good stuff.
Going to be awesome. Mike, we appreciate you being with us here. And good luck with the tour. And listen, we're excited for this Floyd Mayweather fight. We're excited to watch that one coming up in 2026.
And me too, I'm very excited too, since he's talking so f***ing. This guy's talking. You got to wait and hear this stuff, man. This guy's, God, dude, I think he liked me.
You find out he doesn't sometimes.
Yeah, you find, hey, you'd be surprised, right?
We're rooting for you, Mike. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Take care, all right?
There he goes,
Mike Tyson. Yeah. It is that time of the week, a Fransky Friday, and what a time to do it as the Phillies sweep the Mets right out of Philadelphia with a magic number now of 5 to clinch the National League. Scott Fransky, sponsored by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. How are we doing, Scott?
Scott!
I mean, could you be doing any better?
No, not really. I mean, it's great. So. Scott, I have a question to ask you because you're there every day. It already felt like the momentum was changing, you know, with the Mets in this series. But it felt to me like it made a hard turn when Lizardo made that catch that was screaming right at him. Did it feel that way to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that felt like, you know, the escape the first moment. But I think once he goes back out there and starts to get on a roll, then you start to see that, all right, you know, Phillies have done this a little bit. They have guys that, you know, might have a bad first or whatever, and they recover and they stay in the game and they keep their team in the game. And I think the feeling in the dugout the whole time is one of we can come back in this game. Mm-hmm. If Luzardo holds them here, we're going to come back because, you know, the Mets bullpen problems are pretty well documented. Felt like they had decent at-bats against Peterson. They definitely generated some traffic. So I think I don't know whether that one thing would have did it, but, I mean, you know, if that ball gets by, that inning could unravel even further. So who knows? Obviously, it put a stop to the bleeding, and they recovered from there.
Well, they did. Closed out by a dominant inning with Duran last night, and Scott, I'm going to ask you a question that I think would have sounded ridiculous on August 1st, but I feel like it's a legitimate question right now. Which one of the two Phillies trade deadline acquisitions has meant more, Harrison Bader or Jhoran Duran? I mean, I'm amazed at how great – I love him. He's so much fun to watch, and he's played like a star. I mean, we all said when they got him, he's a good player, not a star, but he's played like a star here in Harrison Bader.
He's played like a star. He's definitely played above his career norms. You know, I think he's done this defensively everywhere he's gone. He's been a really good defensive player. But what he's been able to bring them offensively has been off the charts and no doubt more than anybody expected. But I think he's also brought, you know, everybody down there will tell you he's brought a little life, little enthusiasm. You know, Rob Thompson calls it a little swagger to the clubhouse and to sort of the attitude. But I think as much as anything, just his performance in 7 games against the Mets as a member of the Phillies, pretty impressive and pretty important. And, you know, obviously a head-to-head matchup that you needed to fare well in. And, gosh, he's been he's been way more than advertised. As for who's been more important, it's a pretty tough question. It's a pretty tough one to answer. I mean, Duran changes the complexion of the bullpen entirely. I think he changes the mental outlook for the players and even maybe some of the other bullpen guys, knowing that, look, you know, I still got my, we still got a safety net back there in Duran. I'll get through my inning and pass the baton. And I think the players feed off the idea that, look, we know if we can scratch out a run, Duran's going to hold it, you know? So it's a reasonable question to ask because they both had a huge impact.
They really have. Scott, you mentioned mentality and how Duran has changed the mentality of the bullpen. One thing that, as the year has played out, it's pretty clear that there's something about this team, I don't know if you call it mental toughness, resiliency, because they've had some down days or weeks and moments, series, right? The Mets series in April, the Pirates series in June, Mets again last month, the injury news to Wheeler, unfortunately. And if Scott, it just feels like every time it looks like it could go bad or they're in a bad spot or this thing is going the wrong way, they bounce back right away with a good run, whether it be a sweep or, you know, winning 10 out of 13. It feels like it's happened all year. Every time they've reached their lowest, they bounce right back with a really good streak.
Yeah, you know, we kind of asked a similar question to Lizardo last night on the postgame show and sort of framed in the idea that, you know, they went to New York in April and they lost all three, and then they go on a big run, right? They go on a huge run. The same thing happens now. They lose, you know, three in New York, and they go on a big run. They're 11-3 since then. And why that is, Luzardo really immediately mentioned the fact that there are so many veterans that have been down this road before, and they've seen so much baseball, and they understand how long the season is, and they understand that, you know, one series, both in a positive and a negative, they understand that one series does not a season make, does not define you, does not determine you, you know, your path going forward. They always keep that mentality that, look, you know, we won today or we lost today, but tomorrow's a new day, and we got to do new things tomorrow to try to win that game. And sometimes that it can be really tough for young players. It's certainly tough for fans to hold that viewpoint. you know, we get upset, we get high, we get low, we get all those things. But it's really, really important for those guys to be able to do that because it is such a long season. There are so many games, and they just know how to handle that, I think.
Well, they do. It's a group of vets, a group of guys that have been there a long time, and they welcome another vet in tonight. Scott, we're going to see Walker Buehler start this game tonight, and I thought it was a low-risk and potentially high-reward signing. I mean, this guy has been great in the postseason for the Dodgers. He closed it out last year. Scott, what are your thoughts on what we might get out of him? And really, with the way Nola pitched the other night, now I'm starting to kind of move my thought to if Buehler contributes in the postseason, maybe he could be a guy that comes out of the bullpen like that he did for the Dodgers a little bit last year. What's your thought on Buehler and what we might see tonight?
Yeah, I really don't know. I mean, I know he's searching for something with his fastball. He's searching for a little more command and a little more, you know, a certain kind of feeling. And, you know, he threw a lot of pitches in his minor league tune-up, which in a way is a good thing because they wanted to make sure he was stretched out and he could handle the workload. And, you know, they'd probably let him, if he's pitching reasonably effectively, let him run to 90 pitches or so and see where that puts him. Again, it hasn't been a good year for him, but last year wasn't a good year for him either, and then he still performed well in the playoffs. So I think that gives you a sense of, you know, what he's capable of. And again, you're not asking for him to make 32 starts for you, right? This isn't an off-season move, right? This is, like you said, this is like, all right, maybe we catch lightning in a bottle. If we don't, we don't think it's really any harm, any foul here. Not costing anything. It's costing us a little bit in terms of time and resource, just putting some effort into who he is and what he's got. But I'm with you. I think the reward is high. The potential reward is high. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But I thought it was a great low risk way to try to kick the tires on a guy to see if he's still got some mileage left.
Scott, this weekend is the Royals here in Kansas City, and then a trip to L.A. on Monday night for three with the Dodgers. And That feels like the last really big one before the postseason, because the Phillies have a good hold over the Dodgers right now for that two seed. Obviously, yeah, that series will try to keep it. What's your anticipation and what your thoughts on from afar with the Dodgers? Because it looks like they have gotten healthy here, and we might see them again pretty quickly in the postseason.
Yeah, absolutely. It could be. I mean, obviously, the way it's patterned out, like, you know, shaping up right now, is that they would be a second round, you know, the Phillies' first round matchup if they were to beat, you know, the Mets as it stands right now. So, yeah, it's a big series. Sounds like they'll get Ohtani. It sounds like they, you know, kind of scratched Ohtani and they're going to use him sometime in the Phillies series. And that makes sense on their end because it matters to them, right, to try to get a bye. And so this is their last chance to play head-to-head against the Phillies and try to catch them. And yeah, I, you know, obviously the Phillies are going to be thinking about clinching the division somewhere in there. And usually when you have those division clinch games, the next day you have the, you know, you have a roster full of backups running out there. Well, it may not be a situation where they want to do that necessarily. So I think it'll be interesting if they do clinch either, you know, on the eve of or sometime during that series with the Dodgers, because those games do matter a lot.
Yeah, I didn't thought of that. The timeline got moved up with the sweep over the Mets instead of maybe that
in a hurry.
Yeah, I was
theoretically it could happen before the end of the weekend.
It could. Yeah,
you know, before they leave on Sunday, it could happen. But again, a lot has to go their way. But things are going their way right now.
They really are. Scott, let's end with good news, but still we have to see how it fully plays out, which was Trey Turner, and they got the results back from the MRI, and it's a grade one hamstring, which way better than last year, and it puts him on track to be back for the start of the playoffs. Scott, if you had to guess, because when the reports came out and the Phillies talked about it, it sounded like they said, feel good about the playoffs and maybe before the end of the regular season. Scott, I'm of two minds of it. One, I want to give him the most rest as possible because it's an important player, an important hamstring. But if he doesn't come back before the playoffs, that's a long layoff without him getting any at-bats. What's your thought on playing him that last week if he's ready versus, hey, Trey, just rest that hamstring and get ready for game one of the playoffs?
Pretty sure if he's ready, he's going to get at-bats. But then again, that's only if he's ready. But I do think they'll run him out there to get some at-bats. If he's healthy, they're not going to put him in jeopardy. They're certainly not going to risk making it take any longer. And, you know, sometimes those leg injuries, especially for guys that live on their legs, like Trey, there can be a mental block as well to sort of let it go and, you know, in terms of running down the line. But I do think they will try to get him some reps. And if there's the chance to do that in those final few games against Minnesota, again, that'd be a pretty quick turnaround for an injury like this. But if that was a possibility, I think they would try it.
All right. Hopefully it's quick and hopefully he's back and ready to go and himself for the postseason. They need him. Scott, we appreciate it as always. Have a great weekend. We'll be listening and we all want wins over Kansas City this weekend. So let's get him, Scott.
Have a good
one,
Scott.
Let's finish it up.
There he goes. Scott Fransky there, the voice of the Phillies.
He sounds kind of excited.
Of course he's excited.
Yeah, I'm just saying. He sounded
excited. Well, he's getting ready for postseason baseball.
Yeah.
The best of interviews on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.